God is still on the throne, and prayer changes things. I love to read the biblical accounts of the early churches cited in the book of Acts. The story of the founding of the church in the city of Thessalonica is very revealing and instructional. Thank you, friends, for tuning in to your Watchman on the Wall broadcast of Southwest Radio Ministries. This is Pastor Larry. From Acts chapter 17, we learn that Paul preached Christ for three consecutive Sabbaths in the synagogue in Thessalonica. Some of the Jews were persuaded and joined Paul and Silas, as did a large number of Greeks and not a few prominent women. But the Jews were jealous. They rounded up some unsavory characters from the marketplace, formed a mob, and started a riot in the city. They assaulted the house of a Christian in the city by the name of Jason. They were looking for Paul and Silas. When they couldn't find them, they brought Jason to the police station. "These men who have turned the world upside down have come here," was the charge. The advance of the gospel never really goes unchallenged. The advance is always with difficulty. But to have someone claim that you are part of a group that is turning the world upside down, well, that is a compliment. Can that be said of you and of your church? Some people say, "I have faith in Jesus, but I like to keep my faith private." Now, that's not the kind of faith that the Bible talks about. A private faith is not the Bible kind of faith that we read of in the Bible. One thing is clear about the church at Thessalonica: they did not have a secret faith. I hope you don't either. Let's do a little quiz as we start. True or false? If you are a Christian and believe the Bible, you cannot be a scientist. Is that true or false? Here's another question. True or false? There are no credentialed scientists who are Christians. Is that true or false? Now here's another question. True or false? The Bible and science contradict each other. Is that true or false? Well, all of these are false statements, yet a large number of people believe that they're true. The Democrat Party, for example, says it is the party of science. Quote, "We will make our decisions on the basis of science and not religion," close quotes. Our guest is Bill Federer, and he's written another excellent book titled Miraculous Milestones in Science, Medicine, and Innovation, and the Faith of Those Who Achieve Them. Thank you, Bill, for being our guest.
Hey, Larry. Great to be with you.
Well, how does the tone, the purpose, the direction of your book fit into what's happening today in our country, especially with regard to the cancel culture?
Right. So students risk failing grades if they acknowledge that they believe in a creator. And definitely teachers can risk losing employment if they believe in a creator in many of these universities. But yet many of the pioneers of science believed in God, believed in a creator. Isaac Newton, Robert Boyle, Blaise Pascal, Galileo. If you like, I can share some of their statements of faith.
Yes, I think that is very enlightening. I've read your book, and you've got a lot of amazing stuff.
Well, here's Copernicus. He is the one who discovered the heliocentric solar system, which means the sun is at the center rather than the earth, which is what the ancients thought. And Copernicus said, "The universe is wrought for us by a supremely good and orderly creator." And then following him is Galileo. He's the first astronomer to use a telescope. He said, "The laws of nature are written by the hand of God in the language of mathematics," because they'd study the orbits of the planets. Tycho Brahe, or Brahe, he compiled an accurate astronomical observations, which was used by Kepler and others. But Tycho Brahe said, "Those who study the stars have God for a teacher." Wow, I love that one. And then Tycho Brahe's assistant, who used those astronomical observations, was Kepler. And he discovered the laws of planetary motion. And Johannes Kepler said, "O Almighty God, I am thinking thy thoughts after thee." Kepler, interestingly enough, realized there were 8 notes in music, making an octave, and there were 8 planets in the solar system. And so he wrote a book called The Harmonies of the Worlds, or The Harmonies of the Planets, and they harmonize like the notes on a piano. Isaac Newton, he's the first astronomer to use a reflecting telescope. And, of course, Isaac Newton discovered laws of motion, things at rest stay at rest until they're hit with an opposite force, and then they'll continue with force until the gravity. Newton, there was, in 1666, a great plague of London. A quarter of the city of London dies of this plague. And Isaac Newton left Cambridge and went out to a country estate. And while he's studying and sitting under a tree, he sees an apple fall. And he says, well, gee, maybe that pull on this apple, that pull goes all the way up to the moon. And maybe it's pulling the moon. And then maybe it goes to the whole solar system. And so Isaac Newton discovered these laws. He was a discoverer of calculus and optics. Did you know Isaac Newton wrote more on the Book of Daniel and Bible prophecies than on science?
That's amazing.
Isaac Newton said, this most beautiful system of sun, planets, comets could only proceed from the counsel of an intelligent and powerful being whom I call the Lord God. And then there's a famous black astronomer. People don't know his name too well. It's Benjamin Banneker. Mm. Benjamin Banneker. He's a Quaker. He lives in Maryland. He's a free black. He corresponds with Thomas Jefferson. He helped survey the Washington, D.C. area. If you've noticed, the Washington, D.C. is an exact square, and so they would survey it, but they would line it up with the stars to make sure that it's all lined up straight. And anyway, he wrote a popular almanac based on Ephemeris tables. What's that? That's where an astronomer would look at the changing of the orbits of the planets and what dates those would occur, and that would be an indicator of the changing of the seasons. And compared to previous years, you would be able to tell when spring going to start this year. Is it going to be earlier or later? So this was important for farmers, what date to begin planting their crops. And also it's important for tides, so they can see that when the moon is in this cycle, you'll have a high tide or a low tide. And so that was important for fishermen. And so Benjamin Banneker, a black astronomer, published a popular almanac, sort of like Ben Franklin had his Poor Richard's almanac. But this was a competing almanac, Benjamin Banneker. There's lots of other chapters in the book, and if you'd like, I can go through some of them.
Well, yeah, I mean, you are the author, and of course, we only have limited amount of time, and you know what you think we need to hear. So I'm going to just turn you loose, and I know you'll do a good job.
Well, there's a chapter on hospitals, and I think this is fascinating, that today they're wanting to get people of faith either out of the hospital or force them to do abortions or transsexual surgeries and things like that. Otherwise, they lose their job. And so these healthcare providers are being told they have to give up their religious convictions and just perform these type of surgeries and so forth. Well, they sort of ignore one thing. It was religious convictions that invented hospitals. Hospitals didn't come from China. They considered the bottom of the population base humanity or base mankind. There was no motivation to doctor them. The same in Egypt. Healthcare was just for the super rich, the same way eternal life was just for the super rich. You know, that's why it would be an honor to be buried in the pyramid with your pharaoh. And then Greeks, their healthcare was taking some hallucinogenic drug and having snakes crawl across you and of course, you know, scarabs and beetles. But it was Jesus who said, I was sick and you visited me. And the parable of the Good Samaritan, the guy's on the side of the road and the Good Samaritan picks him up and pours in oil and wine. You know, the alcohol is a cleanser and then the oil is like an ointment to cover the wound and then puts him in an inn to be taken care of. And so you have these early Christians taking care of the sick. So in Syria, in the 4th century, they have what's considered the first university at Nisibis, and there's an Assyrian Christian doctor family. They're called the Buktishu family, and they have 9 generations of physicians. They start a medical academy at Gundishapur, which lasts for centuries. But then in Western Europe, you have the Christians at the Council of Nicaea, 325 AD, the decision was made that every cathedral where people were making a pilgrimage to, there should also be an infirmary in that cathedral somewhere. The travelers on these pilgrimages would arrive worn out, and they would need to convalesce at these infirmaries. So the word for traveler in Latin is hosp, H-O-S-P, and that's where you get hospital or hospitality or host or hostel or hotel, but it was this pilgrimage. Then in 370 AD, you have in Caesarea over in the Holy Land, a Saint Basil, and he's distributing food to the poor, but then he also has poor houses, a hospice, and a hospital, right? People are coming on pilgrimage and arriving worn out. And then in Rome, you have a wealthy widow named Saint Fabiola, and she gives her money to build a hospital for the poor, and she takes care of the sick herself. Then in 541 AD, the plague of Justinian, 15 million people die. 25% of Europe dies during the plague of Justinian. There is a Christian in Constantinople named Saint Samson the Hospitable, because he would take the sick into his home and doctor them. Justinian, the emperor, donates some money, and he builds a hospital that lasted for 600 years until the invasion of Islam. But as Islam comes along, they would attack these hospitals, and so they needed a security system force, and they were called Knights Hospitaller. Then you have the Benedictine order in Western Europe, and they begin to have infirmaries in their monasteries, and the Benedictines form the first medical school in Western Europe in Salerno, Italy, in the 9th century. So what we're doing is we're showing that it was Christians that started healthcare. And then in Paris in 660 AD, you have the Catholic nuns following the rule of Saint Augustine. And again, this is like 1,000 years before the Reformation. And so they call it the Hotel Dieu. And the word hotel, again, is the word for a traveler or related to that. And then Dieu is God. So this is the Hospital of God in Paris, 660 AD. And these nuns dedicate their lives to taking care of the sick. They use that scripture that says, don't take a woman into becoming a ward of the church unless she be one who washes the feet of the saints, takes care of them, and so forth. And then you have Charlemagne in the 9th century, and he orders that all of the hospitals that had been fallen into disrepair be fixed up and restored. But then the 1300s. And a virus comes from China. It's called the bubonic plague. And 331 AD, millions die in China. This contributes to the end and fall of the Yuan dynasty of Kublai Khan. And so this devastating black plague travels along the caravan routes in fleas and comes to Western Europe. And it comes on rats on boats that come from the Holy Land to Western Europe. So in 1347, this Black Death arrives in Constantinople. It quickly spreads across Europe, Italy 1348, London 1360, and it kills 20% of the population of Europe. They estimate 75 to 200 million people died in the 1300s of this Black Death, and then it kept coming in different waves. Crops were left standing in the field with no one to harvest them. Well, guess what? People were just putting the dead out in the street, and the disease would spread. And so there was a group of, they were called Election Brothers. They were Christian, and they collected the dead bodies, and they gave them a Christian burial. And then if they didn't die right away, well, then they did hospice care, and every now and then one recovered. And so the Election Brothers were ones that took care of the sick during this bubonic plague. And the matter of fact, at the same time, you had different Catholic orders. Again, this is centuries before the Reformation. They're called Trinitarians, and they collected alms and donations to ransom Europeans who have been captured by Muslim pirates and sold into slavery. People forget, in 846 AD, 11,000 Muslim pirates invaded Rome, Italy, and trashed the graves of St. Peter and St. Paul. It was after that that Pope Leo decided to build a 39-foot wall around the Vatican. But you had not just them ransoming slaves, but they were taking care of the sick. And then a famous one is St. Vincent de Paul. He had been captured by Muslim pirates. He witnessed to his master in Constantinople, or his master's, one of his master's wives. She converts, the master eventually converts, and St. Vincent de Paul escapes back to Europe in 1607 and founds hospitals. And he's funded by the Queen of France. And so the Hotel Dieu in Paris by this time is staffed by the Sisters of Charity of St. Vincent de Paul.
Right.
And they start hundreds of hospitals across Europe. Then they have the French Revolution. They chop off the heads of hundreds of these Catholic nuns because they wouldn't give up their faith.
Wow.
And they would, we call them martyrs, and they would sing their church songs as they were being brought up to the guillotine. But it reminds you today,
yep,
where you have the Obamacare lawsuits against these little nuns,
yep,
because they won't support abortion and pay for it. Ben Franklin starts the first hospital in America. Smallpox devastates more during the Revolution than die in battle. So Benjamin,
wow,
Rush and Ben Franklin start the first hospital in America. And I'll pause there, but it's,
yes,
fascinating information.
It's fantastic, and I'm reading some of what you say about Newton. Newton did not think very much of atheism, and he said it was odious and senseless. So I would agree. Well, thank you, Bill. We are at the end of our show, but we're going to have you back for another show. We're looking forward to that. Well, Matthew, our announcer will come and tell you how to get your own copy of Miraculous Milestones.
Thank you, Pastor Larry. Our special offer today is the new book by Bill Federer titled Miraculous Milestones in Science, Medicine, and Innovation. You can have a copy for a gift of $22 or more if you live in the United States, and $40 or more if you live in Canada. To place your order, simply call our toll-free number 1-800-652-1144. You can also order by writing to us at Post Office Box 76834, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma 73147. And of course, you can order this incredible item on our website at swrc.com. Here again is Pastor Larry.
Should we tell children you can be whatever you want to be? Definitely not. It is far better to say you can be whatever God made you to be. We are not all the same. By divine design, we all have different talents, abilities, and also different weaknesses and liabilities. We are not all equally endowed, nor are we all fitted to earn the same salaries, nor have the same jobs in government and industry. Generally speaking, says Nolan Harkness, Christian youth specialist, teens are usually gifted in one of three areas, artistically, athletically, or intellectually.
Imagine a teen boy who's a very good basketball player. His mother tells him he is going to be in the NBA someday. She would say, "Someday you are going to buy me a mansion and a new car." But how does she know? The truth is that out of the 3% of all high school players who ever make a college team, only 1.2% go on to play in the NBA. Unfortunately, many teens, says Harkness, have periods of depression because of the unrealistic expectations their parents have for them. You can't be happy if your life is built on a fantasy that is as solid as a morning mist in August.
We should give everyone equal opportunities, but to peddle the increasingly popular idea that all people should have an equal outcome to their lives is ludicrous. It's a good promise to win votes in a presidential election, but it promotes a false hope that leads people to feel that they have been cheated if the outcome of their lives is not the same as everyone else's. Such thinking promotes class conflicts, which, by the way, is what some people want and is one of the ways Marxists seek to overthrow traditional economic structures. They appeal to a higher goal, to justice, and claim it's a matter of right and wrong. Marxism claims the high moral ground and is sold as a noble cause.
As an example, let us consider how a tobacco company convinced women that they should smoke and they should do so in public. Until about 1926, it was considered improper for women to smoke publicly. However, the American Tobacco Company, which included the brand Lucky Strike, hired Edward Bernays to change this unwanted impediment to their business. If they could convince women to smoke openly, they might double the sales of their cigarettes.
In 1929, Bernays gathered a group of women who marched in New York's Easter Sunday parade while smoking, proudly displaying their so-called torches of freedom, as they were called. For women, smoking publicly now became a symbol of nonconformity, of independence and strength. It was a sign of rebellion against male dominance. Nothing, of course, was said about the negative effects of smoking, its addictive power, and its connection with lung disease. But when smoking became a symbol of equality and liberation for women, Lucky Strike found a new and lucrative market.
Phrases and slogans like, you can be whatever you want to be, and equality for all are attractive and create the idea that appeals to a great number, but are not really true. They are effective for making people of color and minorities feel that they are being cheated out of something that is really theirs, but they are not really true.
Every journey has a beginning. We can't imagine where this one will end. HumanEvents.com had this report on March 22. In yet another recent example of bigotry from progressives opposed to the use of conventional language and customs, one New York City school is encouraging students to stop referring to their parents as mom and dad. Instead, they should change the terminology to be more gender inclusive. Grace Church School charges $57,000 a year and published a 12-page memo that instructs students to do away with terms that they consider to be outdated and replace them with inclusive ones. Here's some from the list. Instead of boys and girls, guys, ladies and gentlemen, say people, folks, friends, readers, mathematicians. Instead of sweetheart, honey, similar pet names, say the child's name, or child friend in the blue shirt. Instead of mom and dad, say grown-ups, folks, or family. Instead of husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, say spouse, partner, significant other. Instead of a boy can't marry a boy or a girl can't marry a girl, say people can love and commit to whomever they please. It's their choice when they marry. If someone articulates sexual orientation as a choice rather than an identity, respond by saying who we love or are attractive to is part of who we are. Instead of diverse minority, say person of color, marginalized identity population. Instead of asking what religion are you, ask are there any religious faith traditions important to you? Instead of saying Merry Christmas or Happy Holidays, say have a great break. The memo urges that the following terms are outdated and should no longer be used. Here's some. Caucasian, the right term is white. White is more accurate description of light-skinned people of European descent. A diverse person or student, referring to a person of color. A person is not diverse. A group of people can be diverse. Traditional family? We actively try to undo notions of typical or normal family structure because each family is unique. The term real parents should be used to refer to birth parents. Instructing students what to call the people that birthed and raised them is neither progressive nor inclusive. Rather, it rips away traditions and values from people to appease the emotions of the progressive woke. How far will this go before it's too far? End of the article. What is happening here is the axe is being taken to the trunk of the tree that contains our humanity and family ties. One by one, various areas of our lives are being affected by those who seek to destroy traditions, beliefs, morals, and, as we see here, family relationships. How soon, until our children are taken at birth and like chicks put in incubators and stripped of personalities and opportunities? Beware. The first four verses of Ephesians 6 are worthy of our thoughts. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord.
Author, researcher, lecturer, and authority on the occult, Johanna Michelson, came out with her bombshell book, The Beautiful Side of Evil, in 1982. She tells of her involvement in yoga, Silva mind control, and how she came to reject such practices. It was so well received and surprised many parents that she wrote another even more revealing book titled, Like Lambs to the Slaughter, Your Child and the Occult. In this 1989 book, Michelson extensively and carefully documents the invasion of the occult and the dangerous religious practices that are impacting America's public education system, movies, television, books, games, holidays, and more. Many blasted Michelson as a wild-eyed lunatic who poo-pooed the assured results of modern behavioral science. But almost a half century later, conservative educators are convinced that everything that Michelson had said is true.
Today, educational psychologists openly admit to the religious underpinnings of transpersonal psychology. In the classroom, however, its religious nature is usually disguised. Michelson says the purpose of transpersonal education is to present ancient occult techniques to students in order to open them up to the experience of self-transcendence, that is, the experience of enlightenment that comes from Eastern mysticism, the ecstatic experience of unity with ultimate reality that produces a burst of understanding that all is one, one is all, therefore everything is God, including you.
Many of the public school teachers are using occult practice in their classrooms but are undoubtedly doing so in ignorance. Michelson is convinced that the majority of teachers do not realize the source or the implications of what they are exposing their children to. Those who have developed the programs and who set the policies and trends, however, are in a different category. There is clear and abundant evidence from their own writings, however, that shows they know exactly what they're doing and why they are doing it.
Contemporary headlines demonstrate that youth are being affected by occult teachings. One newspaper featured an article entitled, Sympathy for the Devil. Another headline read, Satan's Teens, What Have We Got to Live For? And yet another states, Parent Killings Intensify Worries Over Heavy Metal.
The progressives on the left would have you believe that science is the exact opposite of Christianity. What they don't tell you, while they are rewriting history, is that many of the milestones of science and medicine were made by Christians. To study more on this matter, we suggest you call and get our special offer today. The number is 1-800-652-1144. You can also order our special offer by writing to us at Post Office Box 76834, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma 73147. And this offer is available on our website at swrc.com. Thanks for listening today. Join us tomorrow when Pastor Larry and Bill Federer wrap up this series on the Watchmen on the Wall program from Southwest Radio Church.